You're listening to East Tennessee's premier sports radio call-in show. This is The Drive.
We're working like heck.
And hello, good afternoon, and welcome to another stellar edition of The Drive right here on Fox Sports Knoxville's Fan Run Radio, coming to you live this afternoon from National RX in Farragut alongside Trey Wallace. I'm Russell Smith. Bear has the day off. Hayden Wallen, John Tyler keeping us locked in back in the Truly Hard Seltzer studios. Beautiful day to be out in West Knoxville. Come on out and see us, 11134 Kingston Pike in Farragut, where we are, National RX this afternoon, right next to Wendy's. Got some Piping Hot Jets pizza for you this afternoon. If you're a little peckish, you can come down and we can get into some of that for you as well here this afternoon. Trey, how you doing?
Hey, buddy, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Hope everybody's doing well on this Friday.
Big sports weekend.
Yeah.
Coming up.
A lot of different types of sports, not just one to get excited about, but a bunch of different things.
Well, you got the XFL if you're a football junkie. Of course, Tennessee renews hostilities with Bruce Pearl down in Auburn. Always an emotional affair for Tennessee fans. I think they're beginning to get over it a little bit. Well, I think they've long since begun to get over it, but there are some, you know, Bruce Pearl truthers there who will never let it go. And even though I don't identify with that camp, it's always difficult for me to look down there and see, you know, the guy that probably had the greatest connection with the Tennessee fan base as far as a coach is concerned of any sport in my lifetime, coaching a hated conference rival.
It always feels like it feels like this to me. It feels like he's going to be remembered. And he never won a national championship, and I get that. But it just feels like he's going to be remembered like Philip Fulmer. And I know the comparison's different between football and basketball, but I don't even mean it in a championship manner. I just mean it as folklore at Tennessee and in East Tennessee.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, I'm trying to make sense of it. I'm trying to say it the right way.
I mean, it's hard for me to compare him to anybody else. I mean, maybe some of their more advanced in years listeners might compare him to Ray Mears. I wasn't around for that era, but the similarities are there as far as, you know, Ray Mears came from the Midwest, Bruce Pearl came from the Northeast. They're outsiders who came in and endeared themselves immediately to Tennessee fans and certainly had their share of on-the-court success, but also the showmanship that went along with that is something that you really don't see much in football at all.
Yeah.
But you don't see much in basketball either. But there, you see it more in that sport, but, you know, only from a handful of guys. And, you know, I've always said Bruce Pearl's greatest strength was his greatest weakness, his larger-than-life personality, which is kind of what drew fans to him, but also drew players to him, and I think allowed him to be the on the court coach that he was. And I talk about him like he's still that way. Obviously, he's having great success at Auburn. That stuff that made him successful was also the stuff that, you know, brought him down ultimately. And I think could yet bring him down again is just, you know, when you have that big an ego, sometimes you tend to think you're above the rule of law.
I don't know. I think that they went after Chuck Pearson so much. We'll see if Bruce gets involved. You would think Bruce would learn from his lesson, you know, past transgressions with the NCAA.
I hope he does, man. I don't necessarily
know if he gets taken down. You know what I mean? I don't think he does. I think that's the point I'm trying to make. I think it's going to be like what happened at South Carolina.
Well, I don't necessarily want to see him taken down. I mean, yeah. I think SEC basketball is better with Bruce Pearl in it. College basketball is better with Bruce Pearl in it. But it is always tough, I think, for Tennessee fans to watch him, and especially as much success as he enjoyed against Tennessee. John, Tyler, can you guys look up the Bruce Pearl's record against Tennessee? I want to say that Rick Barnes beat him once when he was at Texas and Bruce was here, and I know he's beaten at least once. I mean, we hammered them in the first year Bruce Pearl was there in the SEC tournament, and I think we beat them in a regular season game. I think we've beaten him two or three times, but he's beaten us four or five times. There's no doubt about that. And they will be a heavy favorite tomorrow.
Beat Tennessee on the grandest stage last year. And, I that was a game that I thought Tennessee – it was a championship-caliber game the previous night. I wonder – here's a question I'll ask you. If Philip Fulmer would have gone and taken another job somewhere else after he got axed at Tennessee, would he have – could you see the parallel when it comes to people just so in love? Like if Fulmer would have gone and done big things at another university, would people still love Philip Fulmer?
Yeah.
As much as they do now?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, the other big difference here is Fulmer's Tennessee through and through.
Right. I'm not trying to – what I mean. I'm just trying to make a blank comparison.
He's from Winchester, played at Tennessee.
Right.
Was a walk-on, climbed the ladder and everything. Like, and I think the fact that he didn't go and coach anywhere else is another thing that endears him to the Tennessee family. He didn't want to go anywhere else. He, you know, Bruce Pearl is – yes, he loved his time at Tennessee and did not want to leave and might come back tomorrow if he had the opportunity. But – if he doesn't, he's going to go coach somewhere else, as he's doing now. Philip Fulmer, he could have had the Kansas job if he had wanted it. He could have had Iowa State if he had wanted it when it was open. A couple of other jobs that, you know, were rumored to show a little bit of interest in him at different times of the last 10 years or so. And he says he wasn't going to do anything unless it was a huge Power 5 job where he could really win at. I don't even know if that's the case, man. I don't think his heart was in it anywhere other than Tennessee, and I think that's yet another reason that Tennessee fans love him and yet another reason that Tennessee fans are trusting of Jeremy Pruitt and his vision for the future is because Philip Fulmer is obviously so trusting as well. They trust Fulmer.
And
that's a big word too, Trey. Tennessee fans trusted Philip Fulmer. They always trusted Philip Fulmer, even when – those of us that thought that it was time for change in 2008 still trusted Coach Fulmer and just thought that it was time to do something else. I think even the most diehard of Bruce Pearl dead-enders would admit they wouldn't trust Bruce Pearl as far as they could throw him, which is probably not very far.
I agree with that. I think that outside perception is that Philip Fulmer was – a lying cheat, but in the state, man, the way he's endeared himself.
Wait. Outside perception is that Philip Fulmer was what?
A lying cheat.
A lying cheat?
Yeah.
Whose perception was that?
That'd be the state of Alabama, Florida, Georgia.
No. Come on. You're from Alabama.
I am.
The perception in Alabama might have been that he was a lying cheat because Philip Fulmer was bashing Alabama's brains in.
Exactly.
And that tends to be when you're getting your brains beat in, you tend to think, oh, John Calipari's a lying cheat. Oh, Urban Meyer's a lying cheat. Nobody in Florida thought that Philip Fulmer was a lying cheat because they had the upper hand on him for a lot of the time.
I guess you could say that, but I'm just kind of going off.
Who thinks Philip Fulmer's a lying cheat? Where did that come from, Trey?
I'm talking about back in the days, especially when he was
slapping Alabama around like a redheaded stepchild.
Slapping Alabama around, going into Legion, going into Brian Denny. They didn't. That's sports talk radio down there, man.
What did he allegedly lie about or cheat about?
Well, they thought he was involved more in the Albert Means thing. They thought he was lying his way through the deposition down there.
About what specifically?
Just about being involved with the boosters in that area of West Tennessee.
Wait, so let me get this straight. So Alabama fans, and we're going back 20 years. A lot of folks probably don't remember. Albert Means was a high school defensive lineman out of Memphis whose high school coach
was a loser.
basically sold him as if he were a commodity to be traded to the highest bidder, which happened to be Alabama. He went to Alabama. Mm-hmm. Alabama got caught. Philip Fulmer, and this is, I believe, a matter of public record, basically helped turn Alabama in.
Yeah.
And so Alabama fans feel that because they got caught clearly buying a player, their boosters, who was the guy, Logan Young, paid his coach. What was the – Lynn something. What was his coach's name?
Oh, gosh. I'll think of it.
His coach out of Memphis, they paid the coach. The coach basically sent him like a package to Alabama. Didn't work out. Alabama gets caught. And so Bama's fans is their position is that Fulmer lied and cheated about us lying and cheating.
No, that Tennessee was in on it. Once Tennessee didn't get him.
Of course they were in on it.
That's when Fulmer turned them in. Lynn Lang.
What a piece of work that guy was.
$200,000. He was arranged for Means to play at Alabama.
Albert Means was a house that could move. There's a great book written about this if you want to go back and find it. What was the guy's name? Somebody can hit us up with this, but there was a book written about this maybe it was just a book written about the SEC, but it included a long chapter that told the entire Albert Means affair. Philip Fulmer's not looking. Philip Fulmer, for the sport of college football, which admittedly is seedy, dirty, completely corrupt. But that being the case, I think that Philip Fulmer is widely looked at, even by people outside the Volunteer State, as one of the good guys.
I would agree with that now. Yeah. Talk with folks, I'd say that. But a lot of people still go back to that day. But a lot of people forget, man, you know, when they went to trial, you know, you had old boy saying that Jim Donham was giving him cash out of his pocket to come on visits. And
well, here, the thing about it,
that
too,
was so crazy.
There's an unwritten rule in college football back in those days was, okay, you're cheating, we're cheating, everybody's cheating.
Right.
You stay out of my state.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not going to come and outbid you for players in your own state. Don't come and outbid me for players in my own state.
Don't knock on my door.
And that's what Alabama was doing. And you can argue and say, well, you know, Memphis should be fair game. Alabama's closer to Memphis than Tennessee. Whatever. Last time I checked, Memphis is in the state lines of the great state of Tennessee. And Philip Fulmer didn't like it, and you know, here's the thing: if Fulmer doesn't push the issue, does Alabama still get caught for buying Albert Means?
Probably.
So what are you whining about, Bama fans?
I know. $4,000 for each visit he went on.
I'll tell you what you're whining about, Bama fans. You toothless, slack-jawed yokels. You're whining about the fact that Philip Fulmer owned you, and still to this day, when the sight of Philip Fulmer sends a shiver down Alabama fans' spine.
Oh, God, that's big Phil.
Because they know who Daddy was.
He wore
an orange power tee on his chest.
We're working like heck.
Stay with us. The drive continues. Speaking of Coach Fulmer, he's doing the media circuit. Did an interview with the Tennessean where he had some comments. If you want to read between the lines a little bit, I believe he was taking out some frustration on a guy that he's tired of paying good money to. We'll talk about that coming up next right here on Fan Run Radio. Stay with us.
Bases. No trigger warnings. No participation trophies. This is The Drive.
Back here on the Drive, Fan Run Radio, coming to you live from National RX in Farragut. Good to be back here on a beautiful Friday amongst the Farragutians in West Knoxville, 11134 Kingston Pike, if you want to come out and say hello. Now, I will warn you, if you were coming out here in hopes of scoring some Ice Bears tickets, major fail by me today. I thought that I had the fat stack of Ice Bears tickets on me, and evidently I gave those away, I guess, or last remote at Jets, maybe?
Yeah.
Because I don't have any, so don't come out looking for those. But I can tell you, if you have come out previously and gotten Ice Bears tickets from us, I believe there's maybe 10 or less home dates left. I know they are playing a week from tonight on Friday, February 28th. It's College Night featuring $3 beers against Macon. And then coming up on it's today the 22nd. Tomorrow's the 22nd. They're taking on the Marksman.
The Marksman?
Yeah. Mastercraft.
I bet they shoot well.
Mastercraft. Well, let's hope not. Mastercraft Boatman. Boat Company presents Nautical Night.
Ooh.
Be ready for boat season tomorrow at the Knoxville Ice Bears game, Knoxville Boat Show Koozies, and a tour of the Mastercraft Factory up for grabs tomorrow at the Ice Bears game. So go check them out. Nautical Night sounds a lot like a lot of fun.
What if you come dressed up like a captain or something?
I think you should do that anyway, whether you get in free or not, Trey. Just walk up there
in my white captain suit.
Yeah, like Russell Crowe in that Master and Commander movie.
That's a good point.
Just walk up there like, I'm
here for the Ice Bears game.
Yeah, just do
Grr.
That. Do I get in free? No.
So I dressed up for nothing?
Not nothing. I mean, you can go in there and Captain Trey Wallace, do your thing.
Then I can go up there and do the Pirates of the Caribbean and Pigeon Forge the next night.
Ice Bears in town tomorrow. Over at the Civic Coliseum.
They play consecutive days in a row sometimes.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing about when you're a minor league hockey franchise, not a lot of folks want to go out and see you on a Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah.
So you got to pack them in. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you better be playing. Get your rest in the beginning of the week because you're going to be playing a lot of, what do they call them, the NBA back-to-backs?
Yeah.
And I don't think they let you rest your stars either.
It's crazy. I grew up with it. We were the Mobile Mystics. We were in the ECHL.
Who were the Bay Bears?
That's our team. That was our team until they got sold to Huntsville. Now they're the Trash Pandas.
The Trash Pandas?
The Trash Pandas. The Huntsville Trash Pandas.
What exactly is a Trash Panda?
I don't know. It's a trashy-looking panda. I don't know. Our team.
That's bad even by minor league baseball nickname standards.
Our team, they just took our team and they sold them to Huntsville.
If you're the girlfriend of a Huntsville baseball player, you're dating a trash panda.
A trash panda, yeah. It's pretty cool.
John Tyler says a trash panda is a raccoon.
Maybe, yeah, I guess. They had a competition to come up with the best name, and that's what they came up with. The Trash Pandas. So we went from the Mobile Bay Bears to the Rocket City, Huntsville, whatever, Trash Pandas.
Do any of you guys remember when the Oilers moved and they were changing their name and it was the Titans, the Copperheads?
What?
That's what I wanted. I wanted to be the Tennessee Copperheads. I wanted to be the Copperheads.
That was literally one of the names they were talking about?
Yes, and it was something else too. There were at least one or two other ones that we were deciding between.
Thank goodness they said it was the Titans. You want to be the – can you imagine nowadays the Tennessee Copperheads taking the field?
Copperhead Road.
The Packers versus the Copperheads.
Think about all the
that
things –
that sounds like an XFL name.
Think about all the things you could do with the helmet, the Copperheads.
I get it, but are you going to have a snake on your helmet?
No, it could be like a snakeskin helmet kind of thing. It would be awesome.
Starting quarterback for the Tennessee Copperheads, Ryan Tannehill.
And I'm terrified of snakes, but
yeah, I don't.
You mean
snakes.
You want to talk about a fierce mascot?
Your mascot's going to be a snake.
Well, and this is at the time you got to remember in the mid '90s when they expanded in the Panthers and the Jaguars. That was the trend. Is
that's
like
a
we
cool name,
we want to go with fierce animal mascots.
But they had a falcon. And they had a panther. You know, nothing like a Packer. a ram.
I mean, are there lots of panthers roaming through the hills of North Carolina? Are there a lot of jaguars down in Florida?
Maybe. There might be some mountain lions.
But that's different. That's
not, I know it's not a panther. I get that. What do you think down in Florida? There's a lot of marlins.
And there's a lot of gators.
And buccaneers. Probably a lot of people dress up as pirates.
Are there a lot of mythic Greek gods in the mid-state?
Could be.
Is Titans a Greek thing or a Roman thing?
I don't know. Would you rather have had the Tennessee Predators? Would the Tennessee Predators have suited you?
Well, that's the Nashville team.
I know that.
I'm the hockey team.
I know.
No, I mean, I'm happy with the Titans. Like, it turned out okay. Like, I like the brand. I like the mascot. I think it's cool. We'll get to these Coach Fulmer comments in the Tennessee in here in just a little bit. Justin Ferguson of The Athletic is going to join here in a few minutes. He covers Auburn, Tennessee, taking on the Tigers. Is that a high noon tip?
That is tomorrow? A high noon Eastern time tip. All right.
Let's get a phone call first, though. Phil kicks things off on the drive. Good afternoon, Phil. You're on the drive, Fan Run Radio. Hey, Philly, how you doing?
How you doing?
Hey, man, we're doing all right. Good. Thanks.
It's too bad you don't have Barrett on there for Philip Fulmer Appreciation Day.
You know what? I know it's cold outside, but there's enough hot air in here without Bear adding to the festivities, Phil.
Well, I can't believe you're not missing him. But, guys, I guess Alabama is making up for lost time, then, ain't they? They dominated up until Fulmer era, and then they've dominated after the Fulmer era, so... I mean, we're nowhere near the radar screen of them now.
It's funny how they don't accuse Butch Jones or Derek Dooley of cheating, isn't it, Phil?
Yeah, but there is a famous coach in the SEC. It's, you know, if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
It's interesting that a lot of people forget Alabama went through four coaches before they got to Nick Saban, you know? They had to find the right one.
Yeah, and it's also, ironic that Bear Bryant was never investigated at Alabama, and it is Nick Saban. So, when they're high on the kite, they're not going to investigate him.
If I was the FBI and I was told, go interview Nick Saban, I'd be like, nope, you can go do it. I ain't getting anything out of him. He'd probably turn around and find an investigation on me.
Guys, I think Steve Spurrier is the other coach in the SEC who turned Alabama in. I don't hear the Alabama fans complaining about them because they respect Spurrier for some reason. Maybe it's because Spurrier had more accomplished the college coaching career than Fulmer did.
Also beating them.
Yeah, I don't know. Hey, I was listening to this audio book of – Armin Katan's book on college football from a couple of years ago.
Great.
The System.
Reporter, yes.
And I had forgotten about, you know, Alabama. Everybody remembers, you know, they tried to hire Rich Rod before they hired Saban, and that fell through. And my, how things would have been different then, obviously, right? But even before Rich Rod, they tried to hire Spurrier. And I'd forgotten about that, and he had just taken the South Carolina job. And Mal Moore tried to hire him, offered him the job in New York City, and Spurrier thought about it, but ultimately decided he was just too entrenched and didn't want to pull a Kiffin and leave South Carolina hanging after a year like that. But they tried to – can you imagine the – you know, how would it have been different if Rich Rod had gone to Alabama? And can you imagine the old ball coach down at Bama? That would have been something.
That'd been pretty fun.
That'd been funny, wasn't it?
It's been pretty fun.
And then Bobby Kremen's, you know, he played basketball at South Carolina. He accepted that South Carolina job and then reneged and went back to Georgia Tech. Remember that?
I always forget he did that.
So it's very interesting. The former, though, he didn't pursue any coaching job. I remember everybody said he was going to go to the NFL and stuff, and the NFL never come calling either, did they?
He pursued Kansas pretty dang hard.
I think a little bit, but when push comes to shove, is Coach Fulmer going over to Kansas to coach in the Big 12? I don't think his heart was in it, Phil. His heart's here in Knoxville, and that's fine, man. I'm glad it is. I appreciate a guy not taking a job that he's not fully invested in it either.
Well, everybody does for these paydays now, though, don't they?
Well, I mean, look at Les Miles. Do you guys think Les Miles is going to get Kansas rolling? I don't.
He might get him about 500.
Yeah, he might get to six or seven wins, but there's a ceiling.
There's only some resources that there. You know, Kansas is going to take care of basketball. That's their number one priority. Football's an afterthought.
I would agree with that, and you know, it's an uphill battle, man. And we're seeing that with Tennessee, man. You know, it's nice to be fully committed to winning in football again. I don't know if it's going to work out for Pruitt, but I have no doubt that he's getting everything he needs. And think about that in Kansas. You think Les Miles, you think that administration is 110% committed to winning? No, of course not, man. But Oklahoma and Texas are, and yeah, you ain't going to be able to compete unless you're vested like they are.
They might have to change their tune, though, if the NCAA does a show calls on the Bill Self. They might have to try to win a little bit of football until the – of course, I'll see it when I believe it and all that crap, you know what?
I'm hearing that there's a pretty good chance it's going to go down. I don't know if the show calls and all that stuff, but if I were Kansas, LSU, or Arizona, or maybe Louisville – I would be very wary of what's about to happen after this season with the NCAA.
I'll say this about Ray Mears and Buck Pearl. They were bigger than the program, and that's the reason why Tennessee got rid of both of them. See you.
Mm. Mm. Interesting. Thank you, Phil. We got to take a quick break. Speaking of his Bruce-ness, we'll go down to Auburn and check in with Justin Ferguson of The Athletic. Get a preview of Tennessee and Auburn tomorrow down on the plains when we continue. It's The Drive right here on Fan Run Radio. Stay with us.
To Big Orange Country Sports Radio Water Cooler, this is The Drive.
All right, back here on The Drive, it's Fan Run Radio coming to you live from National RX in Farragut. Russell Smith, Trey Wallace back with you. Pleased to be joined by Justin Ferguson of The Athletic. He covers Auburn. Good afternoon, Justin. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Hey, we're doing all right. Thanks for jumping on with us. Kind of an early tip, you know. I guess this is the equivalent of the old Jefferson Pilot game for Auburn fans. 11 a.m. local time at Auburn Arena. What kind of crowd do we expect for Tennessee and Auburn tomorrow? I know Bruce Pearl fills that place up pretty regularly, but it's early, and Tennessee not nearly the squad they were last year.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I think it'll be close to a sellout, if not a full capacity game. Auburn's had a few of these 11 o'clock tips this year. Georgia was one of them. LSU recently was another one. So I think the crowd kind of here down here is kind of used to these bigger these big SEC games kind of being at that time slot. So I'm gonna expect a pretty decent sized crowd. It might not be all the way jam packed, but it should still be a pretty good one. Auburn fans have been tested with having to get up early to go to basketball this year.
Auburn sputtering a little bit all of a sudden. Back to back losses against Missouri and a real shocker the other night down there against Georgia. They have been missing Isaac Okoro. I understand he's trying to get back, practiced a little bit this week. Is it oversimplifying it to just put it down to his absence, or are there other things that have caused Auburn not to be playing their best basketball lately?
Yeah, I think Okoro's absence has been a big deal because, you know, this is a team that isn't a great shooting team, and Okoro, I mean, he's a potential NBA lottery pick. He's a guy who's one of those dudes that you give him the ball, get out of his way, and he can find ways to score or create. He's so athletic, and he's a very good passer, that he just gives Auburn another playmaking dimension. And without him, they're having to rely a lot on guys playing off the bounce. And, you know, it's just not a very sustainable way to run their offense. And they're having to get the ball inside to Austin Wiley, and the lanes have been clogged up a lot more because they aren't shooting well from deep. And so teams have been able to kind of pack it in against them defensively. I think this is an area where Tennessee is going to be a really tough matchup for Auburn, is that, you know, play that good inside two-point defense and dare Auburn to hit some shots. They just have not been able to hit them. They're a much better three-point shooting team at home than they are on the road. That's a pretty big gap, but they've got to be able to knock down those shots. And not having Okoro and his playmaking ability has been a big deal. But this is an Auburn team that's had to kind of scratch and claw for a lot on offense these last few weeks, and they were missing really their best physical presence in order to get that done. And so they've dropped some two bad losses on the road against two teams they shouldn't have lost to. But yeah, this is Okoro's absence was huge, but I think Auburn, it's timing up right now with Auburn just not playing their best basketball right now, especially on the offensive end. They just haven't been able to shoot well recently. It seems like the whole team's in a pretty bad slump from the perimeter, which is allowing teams to play Auburn a little bit tougher defensively on the inside, and it's made a big difference.
Justin, straight, Tennessee likes to a lot of times play the high-low game. A lot of their shots come around the free throw line. Not much of a post presence with Uros not playing a lot, and then you got Fulkerson and Pons. How does if you look at this Tennessee team, and I'm sure you've got to see them at least two or three times this season covering the SEC. Is there something on this team that you could see them trying to come down to Auburn and have some success with, maybe at the point guard position or, even Fulkerson? I mean, in your eyes, what is Bruce Pearl and this Auburn basketball team looking at and saying, okay, we can't let that happen?
Yeah, I think it's going to be the kind of that perimeter game from Tennessee. And also, you mentioned the high-low. I think that mid-range shot is going to be really interesting to track because Auburn just has not been a great team defensively, especially with Okoro out at stopping shots, that aren't really just right under the rim. And this is a Tennessee team that's not necessarily built to try to play right at the rim, and that's where Auburn's been at their strength this season. They're a good shot-blocking team. They do a good job in that aspect. It's just when the game's more kind of built on what are you doing away from the basket, kind of getting out a little bit into the mid-range of the three-point game, Auburn struggled in that area. So I think Tennessee, they've got some talented players. I know Jordan Bowden hadn't necessarily been shooting it well lately, but I mean, last year when Tennessee came to Auburn Arena, he put on a show. I remember he shot really well, and so many guys on that team, were really good shooters, especially when you had Schofield and what Grant Williams could do as well. But I think this is a big matchup for Auburn is that they've got to tighten up that defense because this Tennessee team, not only are they a great defense in their own right, they're going to challenge Auburn by being able to not necessarily say, hey, we're fine kind of stepping back and shooting the ball, not going right into the teeth of a defense that has got Austin Wiley and Anthony McLemore and some really good presences down low. So I think Auburn's got to find a way to be able to tighten up their perimeter defense and try to find a way to disrupt it because, they've had a hard time, really challenging shots recently.
It's interesting when, Tennessee fans, man, when you bring up Bruce Pearl, Justin, it's there's always fond memories going back here, and so Tennessee goes on the road down there before he comes back up here to close the season. Talk a little bit about, in your opinion, and you're down there and covering this team, how is Bruce Pearl over the years, how do you think he's handled the community? How do you think that fans have responded when it comes to basketball? We see all the crowds in Auburn Arena and them celebrating a Final Four appearance. But overall, when you take a look at it and step back, how would you say Bruce Pearl's time at Auburn has been, including what's going on potentially with the NCAA?
Yeah, I think the thing with Pearl, and then you guys know, and anybody who remembers his time at Tennessee, Pearl's just a really good dude at building a program and building an identity and getting putting a product out that people want to go see and getting the recruiting up to the fact that people want to play. Guys want to play in front of sellout crowds. They want to see people get excited about basketball. And it took a while, but he did a really good job of connecting with the fan base, really reaching out to the community, reaching out to the students, being really involved there and saying, hey, come support us. And, in time, we're going to give you a team to be proud of. And these last three seasons, they've done that. And I think you're just seeing kind of it go build from there. I mean, Auburn, he got really good support when Auburn wasn't at their best, when they turned the corner. It really came on, and now you're in a spot where, Isaac Okoro comes in and people are talking about him as a potential lottery pick. They developed Chuma Okeke, who was, if you want to torn his ACL, he probably would have been a lottery pick last year. They got a commitment already from a five-star in Sharif Cooper. They're potentially in the lead for Jalen Green, who's a top three prospect nationally this year. So he's done a really good job, I think, of getting people to buy in and then seeing the rewards of it coming from playing an entertaining brand of basketball that people want to show up for. And then when you look at it with the NCAA situation, I mean, it was a really tough time for the program, and there's still kind of lingering, okay, what might actually end up coming down out of this? You know, they paid the penalties of not having to play Wiley and Purifoy for a stretch there when they were SEC regular season champions. And, you know, the feel around Auburn has been that they're going to be fine. It's, you know, if not that they're not going to get punished whatsoever, it's just one of those things, like, they're going to be able to handle whatever's coming next. But there's still just this air of mystery because nobody really knows what to expect. But, you know, I think Auburn kind of feels, and Pearl believes, that, you know, whatever comes next from the NCAA, whatever gets handed down, this program is going to be in a strong enough position to bounce back from it and to you know, kind of get through it, because they've had this talent level, they've got all these, you know, got all these sellouts, and they've got they built a real basketball program that they feel like can be, you know, that can stand the test of time and not necessarily just be a flash in the pan. I think really what they've done this season, following up what they did their last 2 years, I think is really good proof of that.
Hey, while I still have you, I want to ask this, because spring practice is going to be starting soon everywhere in the SEC. What's the feel like down there with Gus Miles on? It was another year of, you know, another off season for a few weeks. Like, okay, you know, maybe the boosters are in on him now. We'll see how this comes about, but everything stays the same. What's the feel like at Auburn, and is Gus Miles on hitching everything he has to Bo Nix?
Yeah, he definitely is, and he's also hitching everything he's got on Chad Morris as well. I mean, look, these last 2 years for Auburn have been very frustrating for them on the offensive end. They've been a pretty mediocre offense for the most part, and have really, the success they've had has come down a lot to really excellent defensive play. And he brings in his buddy Chad Morris in, who gets fired from Arkansas after, you know, less than 2 years there, and is turning the keys over to him and saying, you know what, I trust you. He's probably the only guy he trusts this much, and say, we got a young quarterback. We got a lot of receivers that were really high on. Come, you know, really come in and help transform this offense into the passing attack it needs to be to succeed in today's landscape of college football. And so, you know, they're really, really pushing a lot on Bo Nix and Chad Morris, and knowing that, you know, Morris's track record pretty much everywhere but Arkansas, he's done well with quarterbacks, and they want to see if he can turn the corner with Nix and turn him into more accurate passer. Look back to that kind of five-star talent we know that he has. And he did some really good things last season, but also his stats weren't great, and he had some really rough games in certain areas. So he's got to turn the corner there in that sophomore season. But I think the feeling around Auburn right now is that, you know, this is going to be a team that can win, you know, maybe 9 or 10 games next season. And that it's going to be a young one, that 2021 can end up being a really, really big year for them. Malzahn's has got to kind of stay the course. That offensive changes that they're making with Chad Morris, they've got to stick, they've got to work. And I think he helped himself out a lot by extending, you know, being able to extend Kevin Steele's contract. And as long as he's there, you know, Malzahn trusts him to have an awesome defense. And I think that's kind of what's going to have to be able to carry them a little bit. But They really need the offense to click. So, I mean, he is putting a lot of his future on the, not only the success of Bo Nix, but Chad Morris being able to make an instant impact this year.
Very interesting. He is Justin Ferguson, covers Auburn for The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter at JFergusonAU. Justin, thanks for your time this afternoon. Have a great weekend.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me on.
Thanks, buddy.
Justin Ferguson making his presence felt here this afternoon on The Drive. Trey, what did you learn?
I learned Auburn's got a problem on defense when it comes to the high-low game, and that's something that I watched when I was watching that Georgia game the other night and watching the Missouri game. They do have a problem inside the perimeter trying to stop opposing team scoring. Tennessee needs to try to take advantage of that, especially around, like I was talking about, with the free throw line. I think Tennessee can score some points, and Tennessee's athletic in a sense with Ponce too. I'm interested to see how he responds this game. See if his knee continues to hold up. They're talking about that tendonitis in his knee, but this is a game where if Triple J can get going on the rebound end, and if Jordan Bowden can hit some shots in the first half, and split that off with Vescovi and Fulkerson, and I think they can take advantage of Auburn's defense, especially if they're missing him. So, I don't know. It makes the game a little bit more interesting on Saturday if Auburn's down one of their key players again.
Yeah, it's interesting. I look at the starting lineups for this game. Auburn starts four seniors.
Yeah.
And one freshman, and that's not Okoro. Alan Flanagan is a 6'5 guard from Little Rock who only averages 3 points a game, but a bunch of seniors. And you wonder, boy, you know, they go to a Final Four, lose a bunch of guys. How do they not have a big drop-off? Returning experience. And that's been huge for them. Quick timeout. It is The Drive live this afternoon at National Law Rex, 11134 Kingston Pike in Farragut. We'll take a quick break. Back with more right after this here on Fan Run Radio.
Oh, for real sports fans. The Drive.
Run right with you live from National RX, Farragut's neighborhood community pharmacy. I thank Jets Pizza for feeding us this afternoon. If you're looking for a place to get out and enjoy a little time out of the house this weekend, maybe watch some hoops, some XFL, whatever, Jets Pizza and Farragut. Better because it has to be. You know about the deep dish pizza and all the different types of food you can have there. But don't forget, as far as happy hours go here in Knoxville, it's hard to beat every single day from 11 a.m. till 7 p.m. at Jets Pizza and Farragut. $2 and $3 pints every single day. Are you kidding me? It's fantastic. And half-price wings on Wednesday, 5 to 10, every Wednesday evening. It's dine-in only, but it's worth the quick trip out to Jets Pizza right next to the Shrimp Dock here in Farragut. They'll take good care of you. Be sure to let them know you heard us talking about it right here on Fan Run Radio, Jets Pizza in Farragut. Trey Wallace, Russell Smith, coming to you live this afternoon, National RX. Coming up, hour number two, we're going to check in with John back in the Truly Hard Seltzer Studios for the Top 4-4. I want to get into this interview that Philip Fulmer had and some of the comments he made that and you tell me, Trey, when we get into it, if I'm reading too much into it, but you saw Butch Jones, man, taking again, he's just going to stand there being Saban's lapdog for another year, it sounds like, the special assistant to Nick Saban. I guess he's just going to make Tennessee pay every single dime that was left on that contract. I don't think Coach Fulmer is very happy about it. We'll get into that coming up here in just a minute. First, I want to see if we can squeeze in a call from Jim. Jim, we got about a minute and a half. Go ahead, man.
Holly, Geno, Kiff, and Big Boy Radio.
All right, thank you, Jim. Appreciate the phone call. You've added a lot this afternoon. That's a loser. Don't pay no attention to him. He's a sexually frustrated adult male.
Maybe he can come down here and get some stuff that would help him with that.
It's hard being an incel in 2020, but Jim's making it one day at a time.
It's working on Philip getting Fulmer, hard.
Philip Fulmer.
Yeah.
Is Butch Jones is about to get on his last nerve.
He's got one more year. Can you put up with one more year? February 28th, 2021, when the payments stop and the contract's up.
You're gonna have to, because like we can't make him go take another job.
You think,
right?
Philip signs his check every month? Is Philip the one that has to sign the check?
That's a good question. I don't know. Is it direct deposit? Does he actually send him one of those big cardboard things? I don't know, man. But
signs the check, puts it in a letter with a little monogram of "Kiss My Ass."
Well, if you're asking me, who's less of a man, the coward who just called in, or Butch Jones for not being a man and going out there and getting another job? Trying to enter the workforce and like he's got a pair. Then I don't know. That's a toss-up.
You know what I'd really like? You know what I really, really like? Just for 1 month, have Butch freak out and have Phillip send him a Jelly of the Month Club membership. He thinks he's about to open up a fat check, take it to the bank. It's a Jelly of the Month Club.
I mean, it's a contract, you know.
I know.
It's not Coach Fulmer's fault. You know, somebody else gave gave him that contract. I'll tell you what's going to be interesting when they announce Pruitt's raise and extension here in the next month or so.
Yeah.
What the details of that
buyout
are going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, specifically the buyout. I mean, look, he's going to get a raise, and like that's just how the game is played now. But how much are you into the guy for if
he starts having success? I'm telling you, you better put a nice buyout on him, because if that Alabama job comes open and he has success here,
gonna be iron that job.
That would be a great problem to have.
Absolutely.
Stay with us. Hour number two of the drive. We'll check in with John Tyler, the aforementioned top four at four on the way. Coming up next right here on Fan Run Radio.